This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Second hour of the Diehards getting started. Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitzky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. And Bobby, I am so glad I am on the radio tonight, even if it means I have to put up with you, because Tim Tebow is returning to the NFL. A 33-year-old failed minor league baseball player was just signed by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I want to throw this stat out there. Well, it's still true because pending this all just being some weird one-week media blitz, this will change come July. Tim Tebow, after going to training camp with the Mets, or sorry, spring training with the Mets this spring before retiring from baseball, apparently to play football, Tim Tebow, Heisman winner, the greatest winner in the history of college football, Tim Tebow had taken part in more spring trainings than training camps, than NFL training camps. That guy is now going to be blocking Trevor Lawrence blindside, apparently, at least in the preseason.
Well, first off, Alex, the feeling's mutual. Secondly,
about Tim Tebow or
about it all. When it comes to Tebow, according to Field Yates, it's been over 3,000 days since he last played an NFL game. This guy does not deserve to be on the field. As much as my heart tells me he's not making the team, my head says, of course he's making
the
team.
Well, look, I think in terms of deserving to be on the field, because, you know, there are some, and this kind of goes in the Colin Kaepernick discussion, other things. There are quarterbacks who we've talked about, you know, maybe being overlooked. At least he's coming back as a tight end. Like, if he was coming back as a quarterback, I'd be legitimately mad. And we'll get into the potential ramifications of what this means in the next segment. But, you know, he should have been this all along. I've long said, like Taysom Hill, right? Taysom Hill is just Tim Tebow if Tim Tebow was a little more open-minded.
I do agree with that, but here's the difference. Tim Tebow, he hasn't played in 9 years, and on top of that, I didn't think he'd make for a good tight end at the time. I'd much rather have someone who's more legitimate of a fit for that position. Tim Tebow is built like a move
tight
end.
He's a running back, if anything. Well, maybe it's that kind of, you know, hybrid fullback
tight end. But I don't think he has the skill set for that to be a guy who's catching it and producing yak, who's laying down effective blocks consistently.
I mean, can he catch? We'll talk.
You're listening to The Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitzky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. As you noticed the last time, he blew right through the end of the segment there. Apologies to Andrew Carlson back in Houston, but you can't. Tim Tebow's going to get people fired up. He just is. He's a polarizing figure, and he's one of these people. He's just not very good at football, and so many people want to believe he's good at football. Look, Bobby, I know you were arguing he's probably not a great fit for a tight end. You don't need to convince me of that. He should have been a running back before. Again, what Taysom Hill is now, and maybe if you wanted him to kind of be that receiving option, you can teach him that. We know he can't catch. Maybe he's an H-back type, like a hybrid fullback tight end, and that's how they're just labeling him as a tight end, whatever. The issue to me is, why? What exactly is he bringing to the Jacksonville Jaguars that you're bringing in? Like, throw the fact that Tim Tebow out. You're bringing in a 33-year-old who hasn't played in 9 years who is changing positions. What is the benefit? The one argument I've heard is he's going to teach Trevor Lawrence to be a leader. And he's going to teach Trevor Lawrence how to run an NFL team and be the guy in an NFL locker room. Tim Tebow was never the guy in an NFL locker. Like, okay, he had 1 year with Denver. I don't know that, you know, I want Trevor Lawrence learning from Tim Tebow. And if this is going to be Urban Meyer reuniting with his boy, that's going to be strike two. Remember, Urban Meyer already caught some heat earlier this offseason. One of his first hires after he took the job with the Jacksonville Jaguars was former Iowa strength and conditioning coach Chris Doyle. Doyle had been let go from Iowa for, I don't know exactly how to describe it. Basically, he was acting like a racist towards his players. Allegedly. He was acting like a racist towards his players. Current, former Iowa players came out. They were accusations. He was let go from Iowa. And I think it was within a month that Urban Meyer hired him. He was let go within days. I think it was two or three days. It was a day. It was about 24 hours, and he let him go. So that was strike one. Now if he's going to come in and cozy up to Tim Tebow, strike two, like, I don't see what the upside here, what the plus side is. Is he going to take attention away from Trevor Lawrence and let him just kind of go through his camp? I don't really think so, one. And two, if Trevor Lawrence can't handle the pressure of training camp, you have bigger issues than needing to take the pressure off of him.
I think everyone can see why Tim Tebow is with the Jaguars, why no other team was looking to bring back a player who's 33 years old that hasn't been in the league for 9 years, hasn't played in an NFL game in over 3,000 days, and doesn't have an ideal position that fits him. He can be a gadget guy like Taysom Hill. He's a poor man's Taysom Hill, in my opinion. Even if you dial the clock back a decade, he's a depth guy who's third string in each position.
He was a pretty good ball carrier. I think he could have been a decent running back. Decent.
I really don't. I don't see Toby Gearhart even when I look at Tim Tebow and try to visualize him.
I love Toby Gearhart. That's a great. I love this. Can we just like reminisce like 2010 to 2012 NFL random players right now? Like,
all those great names.
That's my window right there.
And so when it comes to what's happening here, it's very obvious. There's no need to try and explain it away through analytics, or maybe he can mentor Trevor Lawrence, although I'm sure Urban Meyer has made part of that pitch to ownership in the front office. But this is all about the quarterback who put Urban Meyer on the map. And of course, those teams in Florida were loaded, and he wasn't even the only good quarterback there, excluding Cam Newton. Chris Leak held it down as well as a Gator, but this was the guy, one of the best college football players of all time, who Urban Meyer owes a large debt of gratitude to. And so I'm guessing this started with Tim Tebow hitting up Urban Meyer about an opportunity, about a willingness to play tight end, because the Mets legend has flamed out on the diamond. And so, of course, Urban Meyer says, let's give it a shot. I would think, just like you mentioned, Urban Meyer's loyalty to the strength and conditioning coach, and he said he's not going anywhere in the face of those allegations, and then sure enough, a few days later, he was out. I'm guessing that even though Tim Tebow should not take a roster spot from a more deserving, legitimate tight end prospect, I'm guessing that he's going to.
So you actually think he's going to make the team?
Like, I think he's going to make the 53, as undeserving as he may be.
See, I don't think it'll get that out of control. Now, I could see them sneaking him onto the practice squad, because there's bigger practice squads now, there's less restrictions about who can be on there. And then just kind of have him around. And look, maybe there is some value to having him on your scout team. I could see that. I could see maybe there being a little bit of value to, you know, the one thing about Tebow, he does know the game. Or he did. I don't know. This was 9 years ago. But that, you know, you'd think that wouldn't fade, at least not at the age of 33.
Would you describe the way that Tim Tebow won at Florida or with the Broncos as cerebral? Quite frankly, I would not.
Well, he won in Denver with luck. I mean, there were some bizarre circumstances, Tim winning those. Let's reminisce about some of the games Tim Tebow won on the Broncos. First off, you had the game where Matt Prater hit, what was it, a 58-yard field goal?
Right, or it's in that range, 56, like, 58.
Matt Prater, I think when they went on that stretch, I think Matt Prater had three or four game-winning field goals at the end. There was also a game where they were playing Denver, and they could have gotten knocked out of the playoffs. And, oh, man.
I think you mean the Jets.
Not the Jets. Not Denver. They were playing the Cowboys, and they should have gotten knocked out of the playoffs. Who was the running back for the Cowboys? And it was a second and 12, and they just needed one first down, and they would have run out the clock, and he ran out of bounds.
Was it Felix
Jones? Do you remember
Jones?
This game? It was Felix Jones. Thank you. It was Felix Jones. As I'm saying, yeah, let's talk 2010, 2012
yeah,
NFL running backs. That's my wheelhouse. Felix Jones ran out of bounds on second and 12. He picked up like 8 yards. Denver doesn't get that third, or Denver, pardon me, holds on the third down. They get the ball back. Tim Tebow, there's probably some, he's throwing balls into the ground, but there's pass interference, whatever. And it was one of those Matt Prater field goal games. He just won with luck. I do think to an extent he won cerebrally in Florida. I think because there was a lot of read option. He at the very least had to be able to figure out what the defensive front was doing and work around it. And where the read option and now it's evolved to the RPO, I think he is somebody who would understand that concept well. I don't know how well he can execute it, but I think he could understand it. And in that sense, there'd be value for him in the practice squad. Now, I hate that you've backed me into defending Tim Tebow, but here's my
point.
You can
flip it. You never want to feel like if the defender stands,
right.
You don't believe
so,
it.
So I guess here's what I'm saying. Maybe I'm setting this up so I don't just come across as some Tim Tebow hater, as I've been accused of in the past. My roommate in college was a Florida fan, and this was when Tebow.
So he definitely
didn't this was during that season. This was during that Broncos season. He was at Florida when I was in high school, but this was during that Broncos run. My point is this. Okay, so maybe he gives you some value on the practice squad. Is essentially an extra coach. Maybe he's somebody who takes some of the pressure off Trevor Lawrence in terms of the media and helps him out a little bit as a leader. Maybe. Is that really all worth a roster spot and Urban Meyer buddy-buddy with him? And like, I just don't see it. I don't think it is.
I don't think there's a single argument that stands on solid ground when it comes to being cerebral. That's inherent of the quarterback position, but I don't think Florida was doing anything so advanced for the collegiate level, let alone the NFL, that you need Tim Tebow there with Urban Meyer to coach Trevor Lawrence, among others, on the team up in the schematics of the offense. And when it comes to the leadership thing, Trevor Lawrence was a great leader on a great team at Clemson for years. And so I don't know if he needs that help. He handled the media well. It's nowhere near what Tebow mania is, but Tebow has handled Tebow mania largely just by being quiet for the most part when it comes to media interactions. He's not consistently putting out sound bites they're running
boastful.
With.
He's not boastful. I don't know that he's
more,
quiet.
It's more what he's doing,
he knew what he was saying. He knew what he was doing.
It's his actions, though. It's not his words.
That's
so
true.
I don't know if he's the guy equipped to teach Media 101 to Trevor Lawrence, and I don't see
anything gonna,
Trevor Lawrence
tell him?
Indicate he needs it.
Yeah, so Trevor, what you want to do, if it's ever raining, take your shirt off and just go for a run by where you know the cameras are.
Study J.J. Watt on Hard Knocks. Like, exactly. Like,
remember Tebow did that when he was at Jets training camp.
Course.
He went for a shirtless run. It became a meme.
And the other thing that we've circled around here is that with that fluky season in Denver, it was primarily a product of their defense.
They had a great defense, too. We should mention that. You're right. Yes.
They had a great defense that consistently stepped up because they knew with that quarterback at the helm, they needed to or they weren't going to win. And when they beat the Steelers, more than anything, that final play, that touchdown, was a mistake by Pittsburgh because Ike Clark, I believe it was, Ike Taylor, whoever was the starter, couldn't play because he couldn't travel to Denver.
Right, because he had the blood condition.
And the backup messed up and came too close to the line of scrimmage, and Tebow had an easy pass that went for a touchdown. So he really had the lightest lifting in that play.
Right, well, it was the play call. They were playing cover zero. They tried to blitz him because it's Tim Tebow, they're going to run. And so he hits the open slant. People say, he threw a 65-yard touchdown pass to win a game. Yeah, not really. Yeah, that may be what it says in the box score, but not
check
really.
Check the air yards. It's a fraction of that.
Can we talk about real quick here while we're reminiscing about that era of football? Part of the reason that Broncos defense was so dominant, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Elvis Dumervil, right,
yep,
was on the Ravens, and they tried to extend his contract. I hope I'm not getting this backwards. He went from
the Ravens to the Broncos.
Okay, so I am right. The rest of this I know is right. That was the part I couldn't remember. The Ravens, he was one of the best pass rushers in the league. I think he had 14.5 sacks the year before. And the Ravens want to extend his contract. Good player, sure. And they had to extend it by a certain time. There's this weird clause in the contract. Anyway, office person A thought office person B was faxing the contract to the league office. Office person B thought office person A was faxing the contract to the league office. Neither one did, but they still sent in the nullified current contract that they were extending. So they accidentally released Elvis Dumervil, and he signed with Denver, who the year before had been the number one defense.
I hate to bring this up because the number one defense thing stands, but he went from Denver to Baltimore as I fact-checked.
He did. All right, I got that backwards. So, I got that backwards. It was the same era, though.
But the strength of the Broncos team was clearly
their defense.
They had a
very good defense, yeah.
And that's how they won these games, was their defense kept it low scoring, and Tebow got Matt Prater in field position most of the time to kick a great field goal. There was another, I remember, a great run from Tebow against the Jets, but the defense couldn't tackle him and looked like a bunch of children out there.
Right, just bouncing off each other. All right, I want to talk more Tebow. I want to reminisce about early 2010s football. We'll do that in a minute. Keep it here. You're listening to Die Hards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Die Hards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alex Barth and Bobby Krivitsky in for Anthony Pepe tonight. So before the break, we were talking about why is Tim Tebow coming back? Why is he coming back? I guess this doesn't totally answer the question because we were more so saying, why are the Jaguars bringing him back? We didn't really question his motive. But So you said the announcement was made today at about 2 o'clock?
Correct.
So you figure it got done either last night or this morning. Tim Tebow, tonight, 6:43 p.m. on Twitter, Eastern. So this is like 2-3 hours ago. Hey, fam. We'll be going live with my friends at Keto Logic Fuel for a Q&A on health and wellness. Join us live here at 7:30. He's coming back just to sell stuff, isn't he? This is the reverse Rob Gronkowski, who retired just to sell
he's
stuff.
He's already hucking products 5 hours after Ian Rappaport makes the announcement. No deal official, could be done in the next week or so per rap sheet, but he's already out there promoting products. I mean, lay off.
Okay, so here's what I want to do, because we were reminiscing before we went to break about the Tim Tebow era and how he had a lot of luck in winning these games, yada, yada, yada. So I have in front of me here on ProFootballReference.com, Bobby, I have pulled up Tim Tebow's career game logs. So this is basically...
This might be the hardest quiz I've ever entered.
Right. So I have basically... I'm not going to go in order, but I have game by game Tim Tebow stat lines. I'm going to give you a Tim Tebow stat line. I'm not going to tell you who was against. I'm not going to tell you when it was. They'll all be the Broncos. The Jets ones are all backup. I'm not going to bother with that. But I'm going to give you a game, and you have to tell me if Tim Tebow won or lost this game. You ready?
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Step into the octagon here.
Throwing the ball. 10 for 21, so just under 50%. 316 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, 10 carries for 50 yards. Did Tim Tebow win the game?
I'm going to go against my instincts and say that's a game they had to have won.
That was the Pittsburgh playoff game. So I wanted to start with the notable one, but that was
so at least his best performance came in the postseason.
True. It did. Okay. Game two here. Game two. 13 to 27. 161 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. 9 carries, 59 yards.
Are you willing to give me whether or not he fumbled as a ball carrier?
If it's on here, I will give it to you, but I don't think it is. It's not.
I'm still willing to go with they won the game.
Oh, it is. He did fumble, but they did win the game. That was his first start against Miami.
That's it, Bobby.
Okay, here we go. 13 for 29, 185 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 picks, 10 carries, 34 yards.
I'm going with a loss.
He did lose that game. That was, remember, they had that, the year he was the primary starter, they ripped off all those wins.
Yep.
That was the first game they lost after he ripped off all those wins. Okay. 16 of 36, 205 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks, 13 carries, 94 yards, and a touchdown on the ground.
Filled up the stat sheet. I'll go win.
That was a loss.
Ugh, the first one.
Against the San Diego Chargers. Defense allowed 33 points. So here's why I pointed that game out. That's the most points, sorry, second most points the Broncos defense ever allowed when he started. 33 points.
Funny coincidence that they have a bad game and Denver loses.
So think about that. Okay, here we go. Ready? 9 for 20, 104 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, 8 carries, 68 yards, 1 rushing touchdown. He did not fumble.
This is such a trash stat line that I have to go with they won the game.
They did win that game. They beat the New York Jets.
And I thought that was the opponent. I was willing to guess it, but I bit my tongue. I had a feeling that was the game.
17 to 13. He went 9 for 20.
I'll bet you that run he had is on Twitter where the Jets defenders, it was literally like watching a bunch of kids their first year in Pop Warner, where he wasn't doing anything spectacular and they just could not stop him.
Okay, here we go. Ready? 2 for 8. He started this game.
8 passes.
2 for 8, 69 yards. He did throw a touchdown.
That's your tight end one, Urban Meyer.
9 carries, 43 yards, and a touchdown on the ground.
Based off your body language, I will once again go win.
That is a win. That's a win over the Oakland Raiders, 38-24. Okay, ready? I'm going to change it up here. 20 for 46, 2 touchdowns, no picks, and he averaged 4.5 yards per carry.
I think I'm being hoodwinked, but I will once again go with a victory.
So, okay, again, 20 for 46, 2 touchdowns, no picks, 316 yards. That is a 3-game winning streak.
There we go.
No. That is 3 games total. He threw for 316 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Oh, over the course of three games. Oh, my God.
And his team won all 3 games. He went 20 for 46 in a 3-game stretch.
And you know that some of these, he got the game ball.
Oh, absolutely. No, he got every game ball. Absolutely. But this is my point. Like this guy, it was the weirdest thing because he would just go out and win and win and win. It didn't matter. Okay, one more here, Bobby.
Can you imagine being on the Broncos at that time? one of their standout defensive players like a Von Miller, and he's getting all the coverage on SportsCenter.
Oh, it would have been so nice. So here's the thing. I'm trying to give you, like mix it up, but there's just no losses because Tim Tebow didn't lose games.
No, that team was on fire.
Okay, 6 for 22, 60 yards, no touchdowns, one pick, 6 carries, 16 yards.
Well, the numbers are underwhelming, and you're looking for a loss. So
yeah,
I'll say
that was the regular season finale that year.
See, they coasted.
And then, just to point this out here, his last ever game, real game, discluding the Jets games against the Patriots.
Waxed.
9 for 26, 136 yards. Didn't throw a pick. He didn't throw a ton of picks. I'll give him that. He didn't turn the ball over. Career 17 touchdowns, 9 picks. All right, one more here. 6 for 8, 77 yards, no touchdowns, no picks, 4 carries, minus 1 yard.
That sounds like a loss, but they won so much. I'm going to go win.
That is actually not Tim Tebow. That is, hang on, because I just love this one.
I didn't realize there was a C.
No, neither. I just love this one. That is Jimmy Garoppolo in the 2019 NFC Championship game. The 49ers went to the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo throwing 8 passes. He is the only quarterback since 1976 to win a conference championship throwing 8 or fewer passes.
I will always believe Kyle Shanahan got bullied into trying to win the Super Bowl with Jimmy Garoppolo's arm. How does he look at that and look how well it worked against Green Bay and decide, you know what the formula is to close out this game against the Chiefs offense? Let's win it through the air with Jimmy G.
So that was just me proving another take I have that Jimmy Garoppolo went to a Super Bowl with a Tim Tebow-esque stat line. I think I got to most of them. I mean, he didn't start a ton of games here. I'm trying to see if there's anything else that really stands out. I mean, this one stands out because I'm looking at his attempts here. Like, okay, 10, 27, 21, 8, 20, 18.
Unbelievable.
So this is weird. So let's change it up a little bit. Or no, all right.
You can
I'm going to mix it up. I can't give you I'm not going to give you how many touchdowns because I want you to guess how many points his team scored in this game. How many points Tim Tebow's team scored in this game? 21 for 40, 236 yards, 12 carries for 49 yards on the ground.
24 points.
13. They beat the Chicago Bears 13-10.
Oh, all-time great defense. Maybe all-time's a stretch, but a terrific defense.
That defense was unreal. That defense, they were the 24th scoring defense in the league that year.
Yeah, the Bears were relying more on their defense to score.
No, the Broncos.
They
averaged 20. They allowed only 24 points a game, but they allowed like 24 points every game. Like I said, they allowed 38 once, or pardon me, they allowed
the defense
39
the defense
once.
Was locked down.
Yeah, I'm looking at that Pro Football Reference here. 2011 Broncos. 24th
it is
in
a parallel
against.
With that opponent that they lost to there because the Bears they trusted their defense to get more points than the offense.
That Bears team that was Cutler, right?
Yeah,
that was yeah. So. The point being, anyway, and then one more thing I wanted to look up with Tebow here is, did he ever catch a pass? I know there's that clip going around today of him on the Jets, right?
Yep.
That was his only career target.
I don't remember him catching a pass with the Broncos.
I'm looking at it right now. That was his only career target. Oh, you wanted the fumble number? 2011, 14 games, 122 carries, 14 fumbles, led the league. So maybe he
that's where the turnovers came.
Maybe he wouldn't. You're right. Actually, that's a good point. Maybe he wouldn't have been a good running back. Maybe I should take that back because you got to hold on to the ball if you're running back. That's it. That's the whole scoring.
I think there's someone at each of those positions: running back, tight end, fullback. That's more deserving of a spot than him. And I get that. Well, he can do a little bit of each one. But I think theoretically, so could a lot of other players if you gave him that opportunity. So now he's 33 years old on top of it, and he's been out of football for 9 years. I just don't think he deserves a spot. And if he had played for a different school besides Florida when Urban Meyer was the head coach, he wouldn't have this opportunity.
So this is weird. Like, I don't mean to pick on Tebow. That's not what this is. He just, I don't know when we've had, like, it's just such a unique career arc. Just a guy, I mean, the way he won at Florida. Then he came to the NFL. Like, all these gadget guys, generally teams see right through that. They don't get picked. He's arguably the second most successful quarterback in this draft class, behind Sam Bradford. All right, we'll do some more Tebow. We'll do some more NBA on the other side. Keep it here. You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
So we were talking before the break. Tim Tebow might be the second best, you know, had the second best career of any quarterback in his draft class. That would be 2010. I guess his career's not over. We still have to see. But real quick here.
Playing-wise, I think it is.
Sam Bradford was the first overall pick. Yeah. And Sam Bradford wasn't great, but I mean, nobody else in this class has more than 6,000 passing yards. He nearly 20,000. Tebow is second quarterback taken, 25th overall. Only two first-round quarterbacks. Jimmy Clausen went in the second round. He had an interesting career. He kind of hung around a little bit. He hung around 5 years. He's back up in Baltimore. Obviously didn't really pan out. He got a one-year shot in Carolina. They move on from him for Cam Newton. Colt McCoy went in the third round. He's hung around. He's had a very good career.
I think you could make a case that Colt McCoy's NFL career was better than Tebow's. Now, Tebow...
I think you could, too.
There's certainly an argument for either one, basically, right, is where I'll leave it. But Colt McCoy, hats off to him for the longevity that he's had, and he's filled in admirably as a backup.
He has. The difference is Tebow did, however he did right. it, won a playoff game. Then you have Mike Kafka. Remember John Skelton? Remember when the Cardinals were like
there was
super
John
fired
Skelton
up?
Hype.
The Cardinals, I remember watching Monday Night Football, and I didn't really like follow it that closely, but I remember they're super excited about John Skelton. The Cardinals love John Skelton. Like 13, and I wouldn't have been 13. I was probably like 16, 17. Just watching him like, why? What are they seeing him?
I could be wrong, but I think John Skelton was one of those guys that got hyped up by Sports Science.
Yes,
John Brinkus.
You're right. Fordham's own John Skelton. Jonathan Crompton never threw an NFL pass. Rusty Smith was another one. Was with the Titans, and he got a bunch of hype because he was a third-string quarterback. Two got hurt, and I remember the narrative being, oh, we're going to finally get to see what Rusty Smith can do. Threw 45 passes, no touchdowns, four picks in his NFL career. Dan Lefevre, however you pronounce that, from Central Michigan, never threw an NFL pass. Tony Pike threw 12. Levi Brown threw 3. Sean Canfield threw none. Zach Robinson, I think, was converted into a wide receiver. So there's a real argument there that Tim Tebow at least is a top four quarterback in his draft class. And, you know, to look at the draft we just had, being a top four quarterback in your class isn't nothing. All right, Bobby, I do want to get back to the NBA here before we wrap it up, though, because I saw this tonight. Russell Westbrook, in their game tonight, recorded his 182nd career triple-double, breaks Oscar Robinson's all-time record. I'm a huge Russell Westbrook guy, and I think he gets trashed on a ton. I think he might be the most underrated player in the NBA. People tell me all the time, oh, I know he gets triple-doubles, but he's padding stats. They're garbage time stats. They're empty stats. If he's doing it this consistently, there's something to it. The guy can literally do a little bit of everything. If we're really moving into this age of positionless basketball, which I think is a little overblown, but if that's really where the league is going, isn't a guy who can score, rebound, and assist all at elite levels, shouldn't he be a hot commodity?
Isn't the simple question, if he's just a product of stat padding, why hasn't anyone else averaged a triple-double during this time?
Thank you.
Russell Westbrook is consistently doing it. You know, it was one thing when Kevin Durant leaves and he does it and he gets the MVP, and, you know, that's a whole side conversation whether or not he really deserved it that season, but he's still going. He's still averaging triple-doubles for whole seasons. It's unbelievable what he's producing.
And he's the only one in the league doing it.
He's the only player that I can think of where the issue isn't lack of effort. It's too much. It's, okay, Russell, you're so worked up and trying to do so much and basically just win the game through sheer force that you need to shift a few gears down so that you can be a little more level-headed in these high-pressure, tense moments. And with him, it's unbelievable that he has this kind of energy and stamina to go 100% every single game, even like we're talking about with the Celtics. He is the polar opposite, where it doesn't matter that he's out there every single night logging heavy minutes. It doesn't matter that he was doing it with a quadriceps injury to start this season. He is still going to go out there and give you everything he has every single game.
But isn't that a good thing? And, like, it's not like he's been on great
teams.
That is
a good thing, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. That part of it is admirable. It's the other side of it where it can also go overboard and be detrimental, as we've seen consistently in the playoffs.
So you think that's why he hasn't won, because he just exerts so much energy in the regular season that he's shot by the time the playoffs run around?
No, I think it's that he gets himself into such a frenzy, into such a fever when the playoffs get going and when teams are challenging him and there's trash talk and everything, that he tries to win the game through will and just sheer force, and it ends up where he's isolating his teammates, he's taking bad shots, he's not making them, and if he could just
exhale. How is he, if he's averaging a triple-double?
Because he's an extreme talent. He's one of the most athletic human beings to walk the earth.
But what I'm saying is, how is he averaging 10 assists, 10 or more assists per game, and alienating his teammates? Like, in my mind, you can't, those two aren't compatible. He's averaging 11.5 assists per game this year. Career high. You also, that's not, that doesn't mean he's passing 11.5 times per game, right? It's hard to get an assist in the NBA. It's not like hockey where you just have to be the last one to touch it. You have to facilitate and make that basket happen. 11.5 assists is mind-blowing. I think that's more impressive than the rebounds. So is he really alienating his teammates if he's passing the ball that much?
So we're driving both lanes here, because this year he's done a much better job of not just accumulating assists, but genuinely putting his teammates in position to succeed.
Right.
Whereas in years past, a lot of the examples of his assists were him trying to score. It's not working. The shot clock's winding down. Let me hot potato it to someone else and see
James
what they
Harden.
Do with it. Or playing with Kevin Durant helps, too, to rack up assists throughout the course of a night.
I don't know. I don't think he ever had 10 assists per game with Durant. He did. He did, because Durant left in 16?
That sounds right.
Before the 16-17 season. So he had 1 year of double-digit assists with Durant. And since then, he hasn't. But he had it with Harden, who was not a bad score in his own right. I don't know. I really like Russell Westbrook. I like the way
Absolutely.
He plays the game. And again, I think averaging a triple-double, that blows my mind.
He's the only one doing it.
In some ways, especially in the modern NBA, with the three-point line and the relaxed defense and all of that, I think averaging a triple-double is much harder, or is more impressive at least, than averaging 30 points a game.
Yeah, I mean, it takes more, right? You have to fill up more of the stats.
You can be a lights out shooter
to the game,
right? You can be a lights out shooter and average 30 points a game, but that's all you can do. Russell Westbrook, and by the way, he's averaging a steal and a half per game too. He's averaging 2 steals a game last year.
Yeah, he's having a terrific season. I think people forget that last year there was a stretch where he played his way into the MVP conversation, and then he got injured, and it completely changed the equation. And once again, though, as is on brand with Russell Westbrook, he really only has one speed. He goes into the playoffs, he's not fully healthy, and he's trying to just like jam through a brick wall against the Lakers, and it's not working. It's kind of alienating James Harden at times. Game 2 of that series, they lost because he couldn't stop shooting threes that were nowhere near going in.
Right.
So Russell Westbrook, it's one of those things where what he's able to do is unbelievable. And this is a guy, like you said, he's averaging that high volume of points, over 25 a night, throughout his entire career except for his rookie season. He's not a good three-point shooter, and teams know it, but he's so explosive that he's able to get to the basket and do it every single night.
Andrew Carlson, if you're at the mic back in Houston, I mean, you watched him on a regular basis. Sometimes I throw to Andrew, and he's... I tell you there, Andrew?
Getting some water
So I'm good to go.
Okay,
yeah.
So you watched him every night. I mean, are we off base here?
No, Russell Westbrook is... Look, you have to appreciate the way he approaches the game, the intensity brings, how hard he tries on a night-in, night-out basis. But there are times when that mentality absolutely bites him. Like, there are so many times I saw in Houston where the relentlessness just comes back, and he doesn't know how to rein himself in. He only has one speed to go, and to be a truly elite NBA player, I feel like you have to be able to change your approach sometimes, and Russell Westbrook is someone who is not capable of doing that, especially not now.
So maybe it's just me, because you guys make him just sound like a more accomplished Marcus Smart, and I love Marcus Smart. So, because that's Marcus Smart, too. It's like he's shooting game-winning threes with three better shooters on the floor because that's just what he does. If the team's going to lose, he gets ejected because that's just what he does. Like, not that Russell Westbrook's going around getting ejected, but you know what I mean. Like, I like that. I wish the NBA had more of those guys that just had one gear.
Absolutely. Well, I wish Russell, and I've gotten into arguments on the air about this before, it's not what more does he need to do. It's no, he needs to do less. He needs to have a more temperamental approach.
See, I hate that concept.
He needs to be able... No, but when you're coming from where Russell is, where you're talking about players not getting amped up enough, not playing hard enough, Russell is the opposite, where it's too much and it reaches a point in the playoffs consistently where it's been detrimental. And then it's being able to get his guys easier buckets. And the other thing is that, and you talked about defense being more lax. I think it's harder than it's ever been with the freedom of movement, with the skill that's in the game now, and being allowed to flourish. I think it is so difficult to play defense in today's NBA and so taxing, and then you have to do it every possession, night in and night out. So I do think the effort is largely there. It just looks different when it's exerted by the likes of Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, all right. One more breaking news story I want to get to here, because the Bruins won in overtime against New York Islanders. So we're going to have Bruins Capitals. I believe that's the second series set in the NHL. We're going to have the Florida series. First time ever in the playoffs, by the way. Very cool. I don't know that Florida needs two hockey teams. They probably don't. But it's cool that they're going against each other. But the thing I'm more interested in is we all saw, even if you're not a hockey fan, you saw the week that the Washington Capitals had last week with Tom Wilson throwing down Rangers players in that game, and there were like four fights off the faceoff. Before they went at it with the Rangers, they had a really nasty week against the Bruins. I think it was in early April. They're now going to play at least eight straight, I think it's six, at least six straight games, because the Bruins and the Capitals are going to play to start the playoffs. That could be very fun.
It's also the final game of the regular season for those two.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So right. The bad blood's going to build early. You're getting into game one where they're already going at it, yeah.
Because the Capitals play such a physical style, they rub teams the wrong way just in a one matchup in the regular season, and then they're on to the next city. And so, look, that hit from Tom Wilson earlier in the year that got him a large suspension, it makes it even more stunning that against the Rangers it didn't result in a suspension. But it's one of those where all the bad blood that's accumulated, and it's not even from just this year, is going to be exerted into a best of seven series between two teams with legitimate Stanley Cup aspirations.
I mean, I'll tell you this right now. I would not want to play the Capitals in the playoffs. I think that they, for better or worse, and it's probably for worse, they rallied around Tom Wilson, and they rallied around being vilified, and then you had the New York Rangers release that statement, which was ridiculous and hilarious, and it got the GM fired and all that, but this is a team with a huge chip on their shoulder. They've got Zdeno Chara. They might have that. I call it the Ray Lewis effect. Remember when the Ravens were like a good, not great team, and then Ray Lewis announced it was his last season and they won the Super Bowl? Like, I thought the Saints were going to have the Ray Lewis effect this year. They ultimately didn't. But, you know, I think with Zdeno Chara, there might be some Ray Lewis effect with the Capitals. I would not want to play that team going into the playoffs.
See, here's the difference, though, is that Ray Lewis is Mr. Let me give you this amazing speech. Zdeno Chara is a quiet lead by example type.
Yeah, but
I think he's down deep and do it, but he's going to pick his spot with that. It's not going to be before game one of the first round.
See, I think it was more than just Ray Lewis giving a speech. I think it's that here you have one of the all-time pillars of the sport. And I think Zdeno Chara is more or less to hockey what Ray Lewis is to football. I think they have similar standings within their respective sports, among the greatest ever play their position, first ballot Hall of Famers. I don't think it's so much about that guy getting you fired up. It's that guy's last run. Odds are if you're on that team, if you're playing that sport, you looked up to that guy, right? And you want to make sure that you want to do everything you can that guy's last run ends on the right note, that guy gets the storybook ending. I think it goes beyond the speeches.
I'm with you, but it is different because he just got to Washington. So I think they might even first look at Ovechkin's window winding down.
I didn't even think of that.
And then at some point, as they're getting themselves fired up and they want to use anything they can, oh yeah, it's also Zdeno's last year.
I wouldn't want to play that team one bit. I think, do we hit on all four sports? Real quick, your thought on all the no-hitters in baseball. Real quick, 10 seconds.
I think they got to move the mound back.
Hell no, I think it's perfect. I think the dampening the baseballs is proving the point. Hit for singles. Stop listening to the nerds. Stop three outcome baseball. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to wrap it up. You're listening to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alex Barth and Bobby Kravetsky in for Anthony Pepe. One more here, Bobby. I saw this today. Medina Spirit, who won the Kentucky Derby,
this
took steroids. We've got steroids in horse racing now. I'm not a big horse racing guy. We got steroids in horse racing now?
They ran a piece with Bob Baffert and Bill Belichick, and they talked on and on about the similarities.
Oh, come on. And now this happens.
It's not a good look.
So do you get your money back if you bet on the Derby then?
You know what's interesting is they said that the number two horse is going to be credited as the winner of the Kentucky Derby, but that betting-wise, I don't believe that you get the earnings if you bet on the right horse now.
I do not get horse racing at all. Like, again, the horses don't know that they're racing. They don't understand. Like, maybe they do. I don't know, but it's like...
You think that Medina Spirit had a rough night's sleep before the Derby? was nervous?
It's all. I mean, is this the first, I don't know enough about horse racing. Is this the first time that this has happened, or is this like baseball
there
where
was
it's always happened and they just
look
the other way?
From Boston that won the Kentucky Derby and then a couple of days later came out tested positive for steroids or performance-enhancing drugs.
Did they do stuff about it when it happened in the past, or did they just look the other way like baseball?
No, you get discredited.
Oh, so this is a common thing.
I don't know enough about horse racing. I don't think it's common, especially not with Kentucky Derby winners, but... It has happened before. This wasn't unprecedented.
Again, we talked about this last week. I gave you, would you rather go to the Kentucky Derby or Daytona 500? Give me Daytona all day.
I wouldn't even care if I didn't see any of Daytona. So give me the Derby, the mint juleps, the fancy suits. Give me the whole,
thing. Bad drink, uncomfortable clothes,
I don't think it's that bad.
2 minutes of action versus gym shorts and a t-shirt, dirty rack of Bud Light, and 4 hours of cars crashing into each other.
I can have a better time without Daytona and paying for that.
Pep will be back tomorrow night. Thanks for joining us, everybody. This has been the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network with Alex Barth and Bobby Kravitsky.